Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Constitutional Truth with Shar Sines for the new year of 2017. I'm so excited to be here with you guys tonight. I'm extremely excited to start the new year off with such a strong episode talking about what is the General Welfare Clause? What does it really mean? Before we get started, though, let's go ahead and do what we always do.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Again, that number is 347-637-3942. That's the number to not just listen by phone, but to press 1 and get in on the conversation with me. Sometimes I don't want to sit here and just talk by myself. And before we get started with that, let's go ahead and listen to this.
Visit TrueTexasPatriotGear.com. Buy this gear to support efforts by like-minded patriots in Texas who met at the first Stand By Me for Liberty rally. The group is lending their time and efforts to help political prisoners to let them know they are not being forgotten. Visit TrueTexasPatriotGear.com and buy some gear and show your patriotic support for those who are standing for liberty.
Strange things are happening in this land that once was free.
So, brother, I ask you,
are you going to stand by me?
All right, we paid the bills. Not really. We are 100% radio host supported. We don't take paid ads. Anyway, the General Welfare Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 reads, "The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and taxes shall be uniform throughout the United States." Now, what we're going to focus on tonight is that little clause in there, general welfare, where general is in lowercase, but welfare is in uppercase. And as we've discussed before, punctuation and uppercase use of words is rather important within the Constitution. The framers of the Constitution were very specific in the way that they used the words when they were framing the Constitution. But let's look at this general welfare. If we were to sit down and just analyze the state of the federal government as it is today, we would probably come to the conclusion that general welfare, by definition, as we see it today, means Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Housing and Urban Development, Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Indian Affairs, and all of the other 11 million alphabet agencies that we have that fall under the executive branch. But if we look at history, if we delve into the primary sources, many of them being congressional records and the writings of some of our forefathers, many of whom fought in the Revolution and went on later to serve as public servants in this new constitutional republic that they built for us, we would find that what has been redefined for us is not what was originally intended. So I would like tonight for us to look at something that is often referred to by historians and students of the Constitution and the primary sources surrounding our founding documents as the cod fishery debates. Now, mind you, that the cod fishery debates occurred during 1792, the Congress that was in session during 1792, and very specifically within the House of Representatives. This was during a time when James Madison was serving as a representative, a time when he reflected in his writings that he felt that he was of more service as a public servant than when he went on later and served as president. Now, during this era in our republic's history, or the union, if you will, of the several states, apparently the cod fishing industry, or the fishing industry, was undergoing kind of a low period, if you will. Perhaps the eastern seaboard's fishing industry, the fishermen in the New England area, perhaps they weren't catching as much, or maybe they were catching too many, and therefore the fish were not gaining as much as they should have at market. I will be honest with you, I haven't dug that deeply into the purpose for why this particular bill was brought before the House. But suffice to say that a representative by the name of Mr. Livermore and some others presented a bill asking that Congress approve such a bill that the federal government would pay a bounty. And by bounty, we don't mean like bounty hunters now, where you go out and catch somebody and, you know, bring them in for a fee. But on a similar line, to where the federal government would essentially financially underpin this industry. Is this sounding somewhat familiar to what we have in the modern economy, where the federal government establishes regulations for industry? I thought it might. So Mr. Livermore delivers a wonderful argument for why he believes this needs to happen. And then in comes Mr. Madison. And he begins to explain his stance as to why this shouldn't happen. And then he gets into the real meat of it. Not so, you know, he says a little bit here and there, but then he really says, and the source that I have is linked at the show, and it will be linked at the Facebook page Constitutional Truth. It's also at the event. I, sir, have always conceived. I believe those who proposed the Constitution conceived. And it is still more fully known and more material to observe that those who ratified the Constitution conceived that this is not an indefinite government deriving its powers from the general terms prefixed to the specific powers, but a limited government tied down to the specific powers which explain and define the general terms. Now, there's a whole lot of language there. In essence, what he is saying is that the House of Representatives and Congress in general does not have the right to take this phrase, general welfare, and run willy-nilly with it. What he is saying is that everything else in the rest of Section 8 specifies exactly what they can do, that general welfare is attached specifically to the remaining clauses. and that general welfare can be applied only to those remaining clauses and not to be expanded and ballooned into whatever whims and wishes that any representative and senator decides that it should mean, which is precisely what we have now. He continues, the gentlemen who contend for a contrary doctrine are surely not aware of the consequences which flow from it and which they must either admit or give up their doctrine. It will follow in the first place that if the terms be taken in the broad sense, they maintain the particular powers afterwards so carefully and distinctly enumerated would be without any meaning and must go for nothing. It would be absurd to say first that Congress may do what they please and then that they may do this or that particular thing after giving Congress power to raise money and apply it to all purposes which they may pronounce necessary to the general welfare. It would be absurd to say the least to superadd a power to raise armies, to provide fleets, etc. In fact, the meaning of the general terms in question must either be sought in the subsequent enumerations, which limits and details them, or they convert the government from one limited, as hitherto supposed, or to the enumerated powers into a government without any limits at all. Mr. Madison is very clear. We either have limited enumerated powers or we don't. It cannot be but one or the other. We cannot have a list of enumerated powers that limit and bind us through the change of the Constitution and turn around and say, but the General Welfare Clause says that we can do whatever we wish because we provide for the general, meaning broad, welfare. And yet look at the hundreds and hundreds of federal agencies that we have. And I cannot stress enough how many times that I have said on my show here and on other shows that I've guested on and referred to Supreme Court Associate Justice Joseph Story in his commentaries on the Constitution when he very succinctly describes the four basic roles of the federal government, all of which are external, which are war, peace, treaty, and foreign commerce. But if we allow for general welfare to mean anything willy-nilly that any representative should bring forth to the House, then that allows for any and all domestic issue that either the representative himself or his constituents should bring to him. And we end up with this overreaching, tyrannical, overzealous, and overbloated government which we see today. Mr. Madison continues, it is to be recollected that the terms common defense and general welfare, as here used, are not novel terms. First introduced into this Constitution, they are terms familiar in their construction and well known to the people of America. They are repeatedly found in the old Articles of Confederation, where although they are susceptible of as great latitude as can be given them by the context here, it was never supposed or pretended that they conveyed any such power as is now assigned to them. On the contrary, it was always considered as clear and certain that the old Congress was limited to the enumerated powers and that the enumeration limited and explained the general terms. I asked the gentlemen themselves whether it was ever supposed or suspected that the old Congress could give away the monies of the states in bounties to encourage agriculture or for any other purpose they pleased. If such a power had been possessed by that body it would have been much less impotent or have borne a very different character from that universally ascribed to it. I think it goes without saying that had the previous government, and I think most of us realize and understand that prior to our current constitution, that there was an existing government amongst the colonies, and they did operate under the Articles of Confederation. That had they been running willy-nilly, that they certainly would not have had any support from anyone, neither from the colonists, neither from, you know, nor from any of the people in charge as governors or mayors within the various colonies. And there certainly would not have been any convening authority to go about and write a constitution and form any kind of revolt against the king if they had been doing anything in contrast to what we currently operate under. So I do believe that everything that Mr. Madison has said thus far is absolute fact. So again, I certainly ask you, what does it really mean? What does the term general welfare really mean? Does it imply that the federal government is to establish for the people of the several states or the states themselves any kind of a welfare state? Well, certainly it shouldn't mean that. Do any of us believe that the framers of the Constitution intended to have the New Deal as was established back in during the Great Depression? No, certainly they did not. We can look at their readings and their writings and so forth. And when they talk about dangerous liberty and give me liberty or give me death and, you know, throw off the chains of slavery and be gone from me. And, you know, anything that we read from any number of them would certainly indicate that none of them expected for the central government or any government of any level to provide for any of their needs in any shape, form, nor fashion. Certainly, I believe that we can understand from the times that we have all met here and discussed and listened and pondered upon the Declaration of Independence and its predecessor, the Lee Resolution, that it was never expected for the federal government to be fully involved and invested in all aspects of domestic life. And yet, we currently reside in a former constitutional republic. Many would argue that we no longer have that form of government. I've even argued it myself. But that's what we're supposed to have. And yet, we have this central government that was originally formed to simply act as a central body for negotiating said treaties with foreign nations so that the original 13 colonies didn't have to go out and negotiate 13 separate treaties to assist them in a revolution and then negotiate 13 separate peace treaties, and so on and so forth. So that was the intention, and that was always meant to be the intention. It was never meant to be the intention of this central body of government to come in and say, this is how you're going to do education in all 13 states. And yet we now have Common Core. It was never intended for 50 governors to get together and say, this is going to be the curriculum in all 50 states and you're going to get on board. No, that was never what it was meant to be. Education was always meant to be at home. It was never meant to be a free education for all. Education was always done at home, always meant to be done at home. And if you wanted it done elsewhere, you paid for it. It was never meant to be that if you couldn't eat, you went down to a government agency and received vouchers in order to go to a private business to purchase food. Whether it was a biblical scripture or just the old natural law of you don't work, you don't eat. Whether that be working at a job as an employee for someone else, or simply going out and gathering your own food. That's just plain and simple natural law. Lower species know that. Birds that don't find their own worms don't eat. You don't see birds out there forming in lines at the local bird food stamp office. They either find their own worms or they don't eat. What we have today, and what was never intended under the General Welfare Clause, is a misapplication of this clause for the federal government to take control over the several states and the people therein. And its actual intention was to be limited, as argued by Mr. Madison. It was to be understood and construed to remain within those enumerated powers, to keep that federal government limited and within the constraints of those enumerated powers, to keep the federal government inferior to the states and the people. He goes on just a little bit more, and I want to go ahead and read this because it's almost as though Mr. Madison had a crystal ball or had a vision into the future. There are consequences, sir, still more extensive, which, as they follow, clearly form the doctrine combated, must either be admitted or the doctrine must be given up. If Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. They may establish teachers in every state, county, and parish, and may pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools the union. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress, for every object I have mentioned would admit the application of money and might be called, if Congress pleased, provisions for the general welfare. Ladies and gentlemen, that paragraph right there succinctly summarizes the precise condition under which we currently live with our federal government. Our education, our roads, our police, and yes, our churches through 501c3 are all funded or not taxed, and thereby still funded by the federal government. Now, you tell me whether or not Mr. James Madison did not look into the future when he argued in 1792 in the House of Representatives against misapplying the General Welfare Clause to be used to help underpin and support the cod fishing industry. And when you consider how much of your income, not just as an income tax through the IRS, but through every other tax, take a look at your telephone bill, whether it be a cell phone or a landline. Look at your electric bill, look at your gas bill, look at every single thing that you pay and read the fine print. You will see that you are paying more taxes, upwards of 75%, and the vast majority of them are regulated through federal, congressional, universal this, universal that. They call them fees. They call them anything but tax. But no matter what they're called, they're still taxes. If you do not have health insurance through your employer or through private purchase, come every April, you're given a penalty for not having insurance. That's still a tax. You pay taxes for purchasing gasoline. You pay taxes for water coming into your home, taxes for wastewater leaving your home. You pay a fee for electricity coming into your home. The list is endless. And by the time it's done, 75% or more of your income is taxed. Consider your Medicare tax, your Medicaid tax, your Social Security tax, cigarette taxes. In some states, you pay the sugary drinks and food taxes. It's just unbelievable, the taxes that we pay because of the general welfare. Now, earlier, when we started the show, I played an ad for True Texas Patriot Gear. By now, you probably know that I am on the board for True Texas Patriot Gear. We are a business that runs like a charity. We're not a 501c3. We pay sales tax to the state of Texas. We have a bookkeeper. It's the end of the calendar year, she'll pretty soon be doing everything for the IRS. I can't get her to the spa, but I'll do everything I can to make sure that she gets a spa treatment if I have to go to her house and do it myself, because the woman will deserve it. But we do everything that we can to love our neighbor. we actually live the general welfare. And I'm not saying this to toot our horn, because what I'm actually saying now, here we go with something that we can do to help people that really need. Look around in your community. Okay? Think about the hospitals in your area, for an example. Okay? All of them are mandated by the federal government to treat everyone who walks in their door, whether they have insurance or not. So you're paying a penalty every year if you don't have health insurance. If you do have health insurance, there's a high likelihood that you can't afford to use it. There are uninsured people who use the emergency room of their local hospital as their primary care clinic. A lot of those people don't pay their bills. Our tax dollars go to pay their bills because those hospitals receive funding for Medicare and Medicaid. They get to write off their losses at the end of the year. Our taxes are subsidizing private business. If we didn't have this kind of federal structure, these codfish industries in the shape of hospitals, and we were free to keep that 75% of our income, and instead of having an IRS and had all of our income to ourselves, and it was the way it was supposed to be, where our states collected taxes from us as apportioned by the census, and they paid the federal government. And then when the federal government gets out of line, the state says, oh, no, you're not getting it this year, this quarter, this month. Get back in your constitutional box and then you can get paid. Okay, but that's not the way it is. But imagine how much more charitable we could be individually if we had all of our money, all of our earnings. Imagine how much more creative we could be. How much better we could take care of ourselves and our neighbors if we weren't being taxed to death. If we didn't have to register our cars with our states, even after we've paid them off and actually own them. If we didn't have to pay property taxes to our states, even after we paid off the house and the land. People who were truly ill, disabled, elderly, orphaned, they would be eligible, and we wouldn't mind helping them as communities. And the ones who are just lazy or malingering and abusing these systems that the federal government have set up for them under this general welfare clause and are mismanaging, because we all know the federal government can't manage anything well because it's not within their enumerated powers to manage these things. If all of these things went away, we could handle it much better. Then we could go to our local hospital and say, you know what? We know there are homeless people who can't take care of themselves and need health care. I want to pledge $25 a month for you to take care of them. They would have money overflowing for those needs. We could go to the local church that has stopped being a 501c3 charity and is no longer associated with the U.S. Department of Agriculture because there is no longer a U.S. Department of Agriculture and has its own real food pantry and say, you know what? I want to pledge $50 a month for you to provide food for needy families. Or to just go to the grocery store and buy food and drop it off and say, look, here you go. Or to deliver them a freezer or a refrigerator and say, look, make sure they have fresh food too. We really are generous and giving people. But we have been hamstrung to do so because every spare dime that we have is literally stolen from us. Because the federal government has put its nose straight where it doesn't belong under this general welfare clause and steals and steals and mismanages and mismanages and does not do what it's supposed to do. It doesn't handle war like it's supposed to because it doesn't care about the general defense. It goes out and worries about the offense. And boy, it's got general offense down to a science, doesn't it? It no longer worries about negotiating proper treaties, as we have witnessed not only historically with our native nations, but also in very recent history with Iran and other nations that absolutely hate our guts. It does not care about foreign commerce, and I really can barely keep my own home budget, but even I know that we don't need to be having all of these trans-Pacific partnerships and North American free trade agreement and everything else when we don't even have a true free market economy in our own 50 nations. War. Peace, yeah, commerce, foreign commerce, and treaty. So they can't even handle their external business. They've mucked up the domestic business beyond all recognition. It's time for the federal government to just shut up and go away. It's time for the 50 states' governments to go to their wives' handbags and ask for their balls back. And it's time for the people to stand up and say, enough, enough. The federal government can say, we're not paying another red cent in taxes. You want to fund all this garbage? Go ask China for a loan. We're done. And take it back. And if you think I'm playing, I am as serious as a stroke. Don't play their Obamacare games. Don't play their federal income tax games. Stop complying with their bull crap. They have taken two words out of the very first clause of their list of rules and twisted it so far out of recognition that it's not even funny. They have broken the contract with the people in the states. Why are we even bothering to follow the rules? The rule book is meaningless. Rewrite the rules. We are free, independent people. We were born free. We need to live freely. That is the truth. Love yourself, love your neighbor, help them. Keep the government out of it. If they don't like it, tough. This republic was founded on natural law. And nowhere in natural law does it say you have the right to life unless somebody else wants it, that you have the right to liberty unless it doesn't comply with 152 different federal ordinances. that you have the right to property unless you don't pay your taxes on it, and that you have the right to pursuit of happiness unless that happiness happens to offend someone else. This morning, we launched a benefit auction called Pennies for Pawns. This auction is to benefit Joe Robertson. Most of you by now should know that Joe Robertson is a 77-year-old Navy vet. Joe complied with all the rules. He filled out all the forms, local, state, and federal. He built the stock ponds on his private property in Montana. He had the permits. They were all stamped and signed and crayon and everything. Didn't matter. It just didn't matter. His wife, Carrie, volunteer firefighter out there, you know, out in the sticks in Montana, volunteer firefighter, pumper truck, and that was part of the reason why they had those ponds. Not just for the stock and the wildlife out there, but because, you know, out in the woods, wildfires and so forth, Carrie needed a reliable source of water to fill her pumper trucks. And apparently somebody got a hair twisted sideways and made a few complaints here and there and got to the right ears, and along comes the big bad EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Probably same folks that issued the permits. Okay? And I know it was the same folks whose subcontractors accidentally, on purpose, allowed the dams or whatever they were out there on the old gold mine on the Animas River breach and completely and totally pollute that river and all the rivers downstream, completely affecting all the Native Americans and others along that Animas River into the Colorado and so on and so forth, turning it absolutely hideous orange. But that's none of our business. You know, that's the EPA. They can do no wrong. But anyway, yeah, the EPA goes in and says, Joe, we got a problem with stock ponds. They're not in compliance. We hear tell that they may be contaminating U.S. waterways. What's that you say? You mean my fully permitted, complete permission slip given from the federal government all the way down to the local dog catcher stock ponds are contaminating U.S. waterways that are at least a mile away from me? Them's the one. So he's charged and he's taken to court, and his public pretender sits back and puts his fingers up his nose and, you know, pretends to do a job, and old Joe gets found guilty of these federal charges, loses his income because, you know, since he's retired and all, it's, you know, one of them, their federal pension type deals. And since he's an old mean old nasty felon now, yeah, he's got to lose all that federal money. So off to prison in Colorado he goes for 15 months. He was looking at 15 years, but it's 18 months now. Yeah, but he was looking at 15 years, but, you know, down to 18 months, you know, because they're all nice and all, you know. And I'm sure there's, you know, $11 million worth of fines involved because of all the damages and everything that his stock ponds, fully permitted and everything, have done to the U.S. waterways over a mile away. Yeah, so here's Carrie by herself, loses her means of income, but worse than that, she loses her husband. And her husband is sitting there in prison, ill, Vietnam War vet. Did I mention he's a war vet? 77 years old, Navy veteran, Vietnam era? Yeah. And here's Carrie all by herself up in the wilds of Montana trying to make ends meet, you know, just survive. So, you know, we're coming together as a community to help her out. So I need every one of you listening to go to Facebook, go to the Facebook page, True Texas Patriot Gear. Look for the event, Pennies for Pawns. That's pennies like those little copper colored things that you throw away. For, F-O-R, Pawns, P-O-N-D-S. Look for that event. We have had more than 40 donations of items ranging from, well, they started at ranging from $5 to $200. I haven't the slightest clue right now what some of these bids are up to right now, but this community of patriotic, veteran-loving people from sea to shining sea across this fruited plain have come together to do everything they can to help Carrie. She needs firewood, she needs food, and she needs somebody to go out there and plow her driveway, for pity's sake. And it's my understanding that that sweet, precious woman literally can get by on $500 a month. Who of us can say that? So we need to come together and go over there, bid. If you don't want, if you don't see anything you like there, bid anyway and send it to someone else. Share the event across social media. You can tweet it as well. Invite your friends. Please don't offer any more donations of items. Okay, I am wore out adding items. But get to the auction, share the auction. And yes, if you want to make a cash donation, there is a way to do that. Get to the auction, speak to one of the people at True Texas Patriot Gear on the Facebook page. We will be tickled, send you the link to Carrie's GoFundMe, and you can make a donation directly to her. Folks, this is how we get things done. This is one of the many ways that we take back the general welfare from the hands of the inept federal government and put it back into the hands of the people. And I know that Joe and Carrie Robertson are just one of millions of people who need help, but they just happen to be the ones who right this minute were laid on our hearts by a power much greater than we. I see some folks listening in by phone. I'm going to probably wrap it up here quick, but I want to ask if there's anyone who's listening by phone right now, or if you're listening by internet and would like to make a comment, call 347-637-3942. Press 1 to let me know that you are interested in speaking. Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show a teensy bit early because I have ranted enough. I know I have educated more than enough. I certainly do not want to overwhelm anyone. But I really do believe that we can take back what is ours. Jill, I see you there. Cynthia, I see you there. All righty. I think that's Dana. I'm going to go ahead and grab her. Welcome to the show. Hey.
Hello. This is not Dana.
I believe this might be the ghost of James Madison right there. How you doing?
Yes, I'm doing pretty good, You got a lot of good information there you're sharing. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Did I do your speech well? I mean, I know it's been a long time since you gave it on the floor of the House, but...
Yeah, you blew the dust off of it. It'd be all right. Can you get on and maybe tell some people about the meeting to John Day, the meeting that never happened? Can you cover that?
Yes. Thank you for that reminder. On the 28th of January, 2 days after Mr. Finnicum was murdered, and 2 days after the original meeting that was meant to happen, the one that he was heading to, in John Day, Oregon, and also there will be some others that I will get to, but in John Day, Oregon, Mrs. Finnicum and some of her daughters, I know Shalise is heading up there, last I heard, they will be heading to John Day, and they will be doing the meeting that never happened. It's my understanding from what I've read at the event that they will go by his memorial there on the highway, and then they will go directly to Grant County, to John Day, and she will hold an educational session there and hold that meeting that never happened. So if you are in, yes.
Also, as far as I've been seeing on the event and what I've heard from Chris Ann Hall, she's going to be there also. It's planned to be an all-day event. Basically, I think it's supposed to last about 5 hours.
That is awesome. I know that Mrs. Finnicum has put an event on Facebook. It is titled The Meeting That Never Happened, so you want to go check it out. If you're in that area of the Pacific Northwest, check it out. Sign up. I know that there's a cost for the tickets. It's very minimal, 15 or less. Check it out. Get there. Okay? By all means, get there. I have had the pleasure and honor of hearing Mrs. Finnicum speak, and this is not something you want to miss. Now, for those of us that are stuck here in Texas because we are chickens and don't want to go to the Pacific Northwest because, by golly, it's snowing up there right now, we here in Texas on the same day are going to have an honorary meeting in two locations, one at the Stockyards in Fort Worth. One will be in Tyler, Texas, at the same time on the same dates. We're not going to have all those big fancy people. We're not even going to have speakers. It will simply be in honor of the meeting that never happened. We will be passing out constitutions, and we will be sharing the story of Lavoie to anyone willing to listen.
Charlotte.
Yes.
One last thing you might want to mention is on the 26th, that people, where they are, I forget the exact time, but the moment of silence.
Yes, yes. I know that many people are asking, and I will try to get the time and post it at my page, Constitutional Truth. We are asking for a moment of silence and to light a candle in honor of Mr. Lavoie Finnicum.
Thank you.
Well, yes, thank you. And thank you for calling. I'm going to go ahead and move on to Jill, and then we've got another caller holding as well. Thanks for calling.
I was going to say.
Hey, Jill, how you doing?
I'm good. And I James messed it up because he said everything that I wanted to say, Mr. Ghost.
Well... we have to have the ghost of Mr. Madison. I mean, goodness, I
yes,
gave
we
his
do.
Speech.
He's a wonderful, wonderful person, that's for sure. And we in Texas, we love him.
Yes, we do. He might get on our nerves every now and then, but we still love him to death.
A little bit. We do.
I'm just picking on you, Mr. Madison. Yeah, no, he does a lot for us. Mr. Madison, I'm telling you what, he is one of the non-board members for True Texas Patriot Gear. And let me tell y'all, this man has a heart of platinum. You hear people say heart of gold. This man has a heart of platinum. He gives and gives and gives and then gives some more. So head to that auction and see some of the things that he has donated from his personal collection. I would say hoard, but he says he's not a hoarder. He's a collector. But yeah, y'all go check it out. There are some great things in there. So, Jill, what'd you think of the show tonight? Was it okay, or did I go too far? Not far enough.
I was late, but the part that I heard was absolutely excellent. It was really good. I mean, your shows
Thank
are
you.
Always good.
Thank
always,
you.
And I do miss some of them, but you know I love them.
Thank you very much. All righty. So don't forget, we're going to light our candles and have a moment of silence on the 26th. And if you've got the time for me, go ahead and run to my page and post it. Or to the event, rather, and post it in a comment, and that'd be awesome. And then, of course, we touched on all the events for the 28th, and we've got our auction going on. And I'm telling y'all, folks, there are some great stuff there. And there really is a price for everybody, so head over there. And I cannot forget to do this shout-out. Mr. Dwayne Emmer, you know, we had an auction for him. He has donated 6 of his hand-forged horseshoe art pieces to this auction. You have got to run over there. If you missed them from his auction before, now is your chance to go get them. 4 crosses, 2 knives, run over there now. You don't want to miss out. All right, I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next caller. Thanks, Jill. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you? This is Anthony Rizzuto calling from Queens, New York. I just
hey,
wanted to
Anthony.
Make a comment. Yes, how are you? How are you?
I'm doing
great. I just
great.
Wanted to make a comment. That,
please
you both
do.
Are doing a great job. Very good job. God bless you all. You know, I just recently became familiar with all these things that were going on. You know, here in New York, we don't know about cattle and grazing. But I tell you, after watching some of these videos, I was heartbroken to see what went on, what happened to all these fine people out there. And I'm trying to encourage friends of mine to get involved and help out with the auction and make some donations and try to help these fine folks.
Thank you so much, Anthony. It really, really means a lot to me to hear more of our East Coasters getting involved, because I was raised pretty much on the East Coast, so I'm not real familiar with a lot of these Western state issues myself. And it really is hard to kind of make that connection, you know, to do that, as Jill would say, what's in it for me kind of connection. So
right.
having you on board and you having, you know, you making that paradigm shift, it's awesome, because you're going to be able to tell your fellow New York, hey, this liberty issue does affect us.
That's right. Each and every one of us, right? That's right. What they
Thank
do
you so
to
much.
The land, they can do here to people's homes the same way. We're taking your land. That's the same. And you people are standing up. We're here in New York, they don't stand up. You took a stand. That's very important.
Thank you. Thank you.
And shout out to Dwayne if he's out there, my new buddy, Dwayne. Hope he's doing okay.
I'm sure he is. Let's see, it's going on 8. It's probably 6 p.m. out there in Oregon. I bet you he's probably having dinner with his Oregon buddies right about now. I hope he is anyway. So, yeah, I hope he's having dinner out there with some of his Oregon buddies. I'm sure they'll update us out there on Facebook land. But, oh, and you've got to reach out and tell your sister. And when you see her, give her a big old hug. She and I had some wonderful chat on Facebook
oh, really?
Today. Yes.
Oh, good, good. Very good. Very good. Yeah, she's great, my
yeah.
sister. She really is. She really is.
Yeah, she's
oh, one more thing.
She's gonna Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to Madison Square Garden to the bull riding or rodeo they're having. So I'm gonna
mm-hmm.
put up a big old sign, True Texas Patriot Gear, and try to get everybody over there to maybe take a look at your website or your auctions.
Oh,
but
my.
Some good American folks over there, for sure.
Absolutely. That's so awesome. Thank you so very much for doing that. All the support that we can get for our patriots is welcome. That is tremendous. Thank you so much.
You're
All righty.
I know you're tired, so I'm going to
yeah.
let you go.
Thank you.
And
yeah, I'm just a little bit tired.
Just look me up anytime you need.
All right. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. I really appreciate you calling in and listening.
Thank you all. Thank you. God
bless.
Thank
you.
All right. Good night.
Good night. All righty. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode, the first one for 2017 of Constitutional Truth. And look for us next week. We won't have an auction next week, thank goodness, so I won't be that tired. Yes, folks, I was up to 4:30 this morning putting auction items up, but it's a good tired. I'm telling you, it's a good tired. It makes my heart feel good to be involved doing this for our Patriot community. And head on over to the True Texas Patriot Gear Facebook page. You can go to TrueTexasPatriotGear.com and you know, maybe buy something. If you don't see anything at the auction you like, go ahead and buy something from the website. That also helps the families of the Patriot political prisoners. But anyway, we're going to say good night. Everyone be blessed. Let's have a wonderful 2017. And thanks, everyone, for listening.